it. And what we're doing is two songs that have something to do with synchronicity. This one is in this passage. You fly down the street on a chance that you'll meet, and you meet not really by chance. Won't y'all sing with me?
Hello, flowers, wherever you are, I hope your troubles are few.
Left over from last time was, is there a little bit of an echo?
Not much, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I mentioned about the Battle Hymn of the Republic, I forgot to mention the author is Julia Ward Howe, H-O-W-E. She wrote the words, and the tune is by William Steff, S-T-E-F-F-E. And this song originally was about abolition of slavery, and she was attending a public review of troops, Union troops, and she heard this song, and her friend, Reverend Clark, suggested that she write new words for it. And that night, which was November 18, 1861, she awoke in the middle of the night with all the words of the song in her head. So she got up right away and wrote them down. Well, that would be a wonderful example of synchronicity. They were published in the Atlantic Monthly, and they became a famous patriotic song, of course. But that would be an example of what we're talking about, that it seems like something wants to come through us, and it doesn't require our effort. It just begins to happen. And we've all noticed those moments. And I consider them an example of grace. It's now clear that synchronicity is the essence of grace in individual lives. Everybody getting that idea? Okay, so we're on the fifth chapter of our book, The Power of Coincidence, How Life Shows Us What We Need to Know, a good summary. And I'd like to begin with something on page 95, if you can take a quick look. Because the first topic is the idea of fate or destiny. And Jung has a very interesting way of describing the distinction. If you walk to it upright, it's called destiny, and if you're dragged to it, it's called fate. What is our destiny? To express in our lifetime the fullness of our humanity. And so on 95, third paragraph down, despair is the illusion that there is an inexorable fate that awaits our condition and our enterprise. So no matter what something is going to happen that I'll have no control over and that's already set up. But synchronicity tells us there's no such thing as an inexorable fate. Choices continue to arise and paths continue to appear even until the 11th hour of our lifetime. And even if the path is to grieve an ending, the next step will be to go on. Even if it is our ending, are we not still able to salute the sunset with dignity, equanimity, and deeply contented serenity because of all the spiritual work we've done in ourselves? So I want to begin with that, and then take a look at this whole subject of chance. It's the unpredictable, unexpected, uncontrollable, unknown element in events that could shock or surprise us, and it has no explanation. There are random events, but a famous psychologist, Heinz Kohut, says there is a healing power in this random array. When we start to trust that, we're on this path of synchronicity. Is there any trust in... No.
A market.
Market. So what we might call chance or luck are just mere coincidence, whereas synchronicity is happening when you find the meaning in the coincidence that occurs. So the chance and the synchronicity will look the same, but what makes chance into synchronicity is that realization that something is happening that's part of a vaster design that's unfolding in our lives. So we might say chance happens to us, but synchronicity happens in us. Okay, any questions that came up in your reading on this topic? Because we have so much to cover today, I don't want to spend too much time on it. Thank you. Okay. All right, so let's just take a look at one final thing on page 103, third paragraph. I think this one may summarize it well. Chance may simply be a playful way the universe has of collaborating with us in the working out of our destiny. Not interfering with it, but collaborating. Thus, synchronicity integrates the irrational into an organized procession. The challenge is always the same, to believe in the meaningful design in spite of the random display. So let's just say a word about that.
Hey, David, I got to remind everyone here
that
that was a remark I made when I kicked off this series, that God is so great that he can make his interface with our life look random.
There you go. You've got the random display. Hide or reveal. A disaster design. And this will be a good way of describing faith. That we look at what happened to us in the course of life and see that there was some kind of design in it. By design, we mean that there's some kind of orderly story that's telling itself through what happened to us, and this is the story of how we became human. What is it to be human? To show all the love that's in us, to access all the wisdom that comes through us, and to bring healing into the world rather than division. It's not really about a list of beliefs. It's about how you could trust that under what looked so random and what might have been so painful is something more going on that has a design, meaning a purpose and a direction, or another way of saying it is an evolutionary flavor to it. And what's evolving is this psyche of ours that at first was so caught up in the ego's purposes, which are to get as much as we can, to be in control as often as we can, to make ourselves first, make ourselves the center of things. All of that is being gently moved in the direction of letting go of control, being more open to cooperation with others, showing love rather than hate, etc., moving from fear to courage. That kind of evolution is not only something that we want to happen, but there's something in the whole style of the universe that wants to help us move in that direction. Another way of referring to grace. So since synchronicity seems to show us exactly that, it's a good example of grace at work. So no matter what the display looks like, no matter how weak I seem, no matter how many mistakes I've made, no matter how inadequate I've been in so many ways, there's the same design in me that was in Christ, St. Francis, Mother Teresa. And it wants to come out. See how this would be the opposite of an ineluctable fate. And you can't do anything about it. So it's not like that. It's an invitation, and we would have to accept the invitation and do what it takes to join in the process of expressing the design. Yes, Peter.
Could it be said that this applies on the scale of all humanity as well as in the individual?
Yes, it's collective and individual.
So we're on the downside now of the future upside.
We're going to talk about that distinction.
Oh,
Yeah, it has a lot of ups and downs to it. Okay, any other questions about this?
Dave?
Yes.
Don't we as humans have a tendency to project design on random display? I'm thinking of the way we look up at the heavens, and there's a random display of stars, but we see constellations.
Yes.
So is that not built in?
Yes, that's a very good point. And what's a great example? Because it isn't as if there are actual constellations in that, in the same sense that we designed them. He's saying we see Greek mythical characters in the layout of the stars. The fact that we would look for a design, and that all humans have looked for a design, tells us what wonderful optimism is in us. That we would never be satisfied with just the random, that we would always look for something that has purpose and direction. And then, of course, you could say, well, that's all there is. It's just that we've looked for that and we put that in here. You could say, no, I really believe that there is already a design and I'm discovering it. That's faith. The other approach is, oh, I'm projecting a design into it, is a way of putting all the accent and meaning on our own style of knowing. And so that's often what's said by people who are more scientific materialists, people who don't see the spiritual side. So it'll always be up to you as to how you want to see it. But synchronicity, when it happens, it definitely moves us more in the direction of there is a design, whether or not I see it. You've noticed that? Okay, any other questions on this? Good. So I'm going through the high points of our chapters. And now we're going to a very central example of synchronicity, the givens of our human life. It just so happens, remember, synchronicity is a connection between what we have no control over and what the real meaning of something is. So we have no control over certain givens. I talk about these in the 5 Things You Cannot Change, my other book. The first, so I'll use those givens. The first one is that everything changes and ends. That things don't always go according to our plans. Not even writing. That life is not always fair. Certainly noticed that one. That some kind of suffering is part of everyone's life. Universal. And finally, that people are not loyal and loving all the time. Now, you can look at these as terrible penalties that have been placed on us, even though we're guiltless. You can say how cruel that we live in a world in which everything changes and ends, things don't go according to our plans, etc. Or you could look at this synchronously, that there's a synchronicity, a meaningful coincidence between these givens that we all face and all live with, and precisely what it takes for the full design of who we are to be expressed. Or another way of saying it is, these could be the very exact ingredients that make us people of depth, character, and compassion. the fulfillment of our human design. So in a world in which everything changes and ends, we're more likely to cherish what we have and to learn the art of grieving what ends. And through this experience of grief, we notice that we become more sensitive and that we trust our psyche to know how to work through losses and hurts. This wouldn't have happened in a world in which things didn't change and end. When things don't go according to our plans, in other words, when we're not in full control of the shape that our life takes, we might notice that there are other coincidences, synchronicities that occur that lead us in a different direction. And when that happens, we can notice that our real fulfillment comes to pass. So what I planned wasn't really going to make me all that I could be, but what happened beyond my control when the plans failed and something surprised me opened me in a whole new way. The fact that things are not fair means that I would be more likely to make the choice for a truly unconditional way of loving, because I'm not only going to love you if you love me, so it can all be fair. My challenge is to love no matter what, and to be just even when others are unjust. So I'm being called to a higher way of living by the very fact that things are not fair. Whereas if everything were fair and everybody acted fairly, then that particular virtue would not arise in me. If there were no suffering, then I wouldn't have all the wonderful gifts of growth that come through the enduring and living through painful events. In fact, the very definition of hero is one who has lived through pain and been transformed because of it. So there'd be no such thing as a hero journey if there were no suffering. The fact that other people are not always loyal and loving makes me more careful about whom I trust. This helps me be stronger. It also calls me not to be like those who aren't loyal and loving, but to be loyal and loving no matter what, no matter how others treat me. So that too leads me to this unconditional style. Now it's interesting that these same five givens are the very ones that are addressed in religion the world over, right from the beginning. Because one style of religion is, this would not be an adult style, but it would be a consoling one. One style of religion, including the ones we were brought up with in our childhood most likely, is to take each of these gifts and to show that they don't really matter because there's something else going on that ultimately abrogates them and makes them less important. For instance, yes, everything changes and ends, but there's a heaven, eternity, that is changeless, as is God. He does not begin or end. And so when I join in with that, all of the changes and endings that happen become less important, because all that really matters is the heaven of changelessness and endlessness. It doesn't matter that things don't go according to plan, because God has a divine plan that can't be upset by anything we may do. It doesn't matter that things are unfair, because at the end of time, God will separate the sheep from the goats. He will bring those who have been obedient, the sheep, into heaven, and he will condemn the goats who have been capricious and disobedient to eternal hell. And that will be fair. Doesn't matter that there's suffering in this life, because short the suffering, eternal the glory in heaven, and suffering has a redemptive value. And it doesn't matter that people are not loyal and loving, because God is love, and behold, I am with you all days, even until the end of time. So each of these givens could become less impactful, don't land with as much of a thud if you have that traditional kind of faith. But I think if we look at this in a more mature religious style, I'll go through the five again in this more mature way, we would love the earth and love the human experience and the human enterprise and not dismiss it as less important because there's a heaven in the by and by. Everybody follow? Good. So let's have a question.
I think it's important to understand that even I can't love and be loyal all of the time, because no one has a perfect control over their ego.
Good point. So I may not be loving and loyal all the time, but I can always apologize and make amends. That will be our spiritual style. So looking at this in a more mature spiritual view, this will be as opposed to the way I just listed them in the traditional style, then changes and endings are accepted with the unconditional yes . In fact, Jung, talking about these conditions, as I mentioned in the book, proposed an unconditional yes to the givens of our existence without protest. So instead of protesting, I'm saying, oh, it's like this. If it's like this here, if this world has givens like this, it must be that these are the very givens I need to accomplish my journey. How do I accomplish my journey through life? I accept with an unconditional yes that everything is changing and ending, and this leads me to the Buddhist style of letting go of attachment, a highly spiritual event in our life. To let go of the attachment, to let go and go on. So that's how that one looks in the more mature spiritual consciousness. The fact that things don't go according to plan leads us to the synchronicity, which is our whole topic. The fact that things are not fair means that I can have compassion for those who continue to be unfair, while also protecting myself, and I can make the choice, the commitment, to be fair in my own life. The suffering has redemptive value. That one's the same traditional and modern view. It isn't really just a modern view. People have always understood this more mature style. It's just that now we seem to be more conscious of it. And the people are not loving and loyal all the time. Leads me to compassion for those who are not loyal and loving rather than retaliation. Another spiritual style, because it's the opposite of the ego's usual choice, which is get back at people for what they've done to you. So I'm welcoming all of these then with the unconditional yes, because I'm trusting that they match up perfectly, like five fingers matching up, two hands, they match up perfectly with the way that I become the human that I'm meant to be. What kind of a human is this? One who, because things change and end, is no longer attached. Because plans don't always happen in accord with the way I design them, has come to trust the power of grace. One who, noticing that things are unfair, has made the decision to act with fairness no matter how others act, hence I become unconditional. One who has found the redemptive value of suffering, and one who shows love and loyalty not based on how others show it, and one who only places loyalty in those who can be trusted to hold it in a way that's reliable. So let's hold on our question for a minute. Everybody following how this works? It's such a beautiful concept, and I think of all the spiritual practices I've ever done, I can certainly admit this, when I found this one, which is the unconditional yes to the way things are, this has been the most powerful spiritual practice I have ever found or ever used. And by the way, the unconditional yes is expressed over and over again by all of us because it's found right there in the Lord's Prayer. It's called, "Thy will be done." What is thy will? Whatever I don't have control over. The givens of life. So we were saying it all along. Thy will be done. That is a big challenge for the ego, because it means surrender of control. Accepting what is with surrender. Okay, any questions about this before we go on? So way in the back first. Yes?
Is that what you mean on page 123? I rest in the light.
Hold it, 123. Okay, what is your...
I rest in the light of equanimity and let it through me continually.
Yes.
Yes,
she's saying on 123, I rest in the light of equanimity, which is to accept everything equally, and let it through me continually. Let the light through me. How does the light come through us? By saying yes. Yes to what? Yes to the things we cannot change. Also called God's will. See, the other answers, the traditional religious answers that make these less important, are anti-incarnational. They're against the full incarnation of the divine in the human experience. Exactly what Christ came to be and show us. Divine kingdom. So, when you cancel these, you're saying, oh, the human part doesn't matter. Andrew.
Seems to me the problem comes when you move from the individual to the political and try to think what can I change and what not.
Yes.
Because at that point, otherwise, how are you going to fight for justice?
Yeah, exactly. So she's bringing up the other side of this, which would be the courage to change the things we can't. So on the one hand, we accept the givens, and on the other hand, we keep doing all we can so that the world will be more fair.
The bonding for the nun.
Yes. The whole thing with the nuns fits with that. Yes.
Don't you have to be open to this, see the design?
Yes, you'd have to keep opening yourself to see the design that's happening, and that would take a certain, how to open it takes a certain trust. There's a design in here somewhere. There's something in this that can help me. Okay, Peter?
It seems to me that it takes a lifetime to acquire what these will grant, and at that point the senior is not considered contributory to our society today.
Well, good point. It does take us a long time to get the idea, even though we noticed these right from the beginning. Yeah.
I had such a good mother, I think, that it's not that helpful.
She helps you see this?
She just lived it in front of me, and I absorbed that.
Good. Yes, it is wonderful to have a model of it. Good. Yeah.
Regarding the number two given.
Yeah, things don't go according to our plan.
It seems like that balancing act of how to make plans, but then recognize synchronicity, because if you can get that under control, then it seems like synchronicity starts accelerating quickly. And how do you move from the plan into the recognition of synchronicity, and then it starts sort of
It would take letting go of trying to be in control of everything.
Right.
Like trusting that what unfolds might be more interesting than what I had planned on. That would be hard for the ego to say. Mm-hmm. Way in the back. Yeah.
I certainly don't have a handle on this personally, but I think Buksha do. It just pops up. I mean, it's a really good movie.
Yes. Good example. Thank you. Just mentioning a movie in which a woman had found herself in a terrible crisis, but from that she moved into a whole new thing. Her real destiny. Gordon?
If someone accepts the possibility of reincarnation and karma, that could explain some of those over a long period of time.
Karma helps us understand also. Yes. Of what's unfolding. Okay, so let's go on. I want to go over to the idea of guides. Now I've moved over to page 134. If you want to take a quick look there. The guide archetype, what's an archetype? It's a common motif in the human story, and it appears in stories as a character that's very recognizable. This character is the wise old man or wise old woman who gives advice to the hero or heroine. So Glinda the Good Witch would be like the guide archetype for Dorothy. And Yoda would be a guide archetype. The Oracle of Delphi is a guide archetype, that there's something deep in the earth, the the priestess who interpreted the wisdom was underground, a way of saying that the best wisdom is deep in the earth. So the guide archetype is the assisting force. That shows us the design or points to how to get there. It shows the way. And I wanted to just spend a little bit of time on how do you know whether the particular guide that you're listening to is real or not. A true guide will have characteristics like this. And as you hear these, compare them to how we were brought up religiously to obey the hierarchy, and notice how this fits. So the real trustworthy guide is the one who asks for attention, but not blind obedience. So as soon as someone's asking for blind obedience, that's not a guide, that's the person who's trying to control you. Yes, or the whole system could be like that. Secondly, he's an escort to your unique destiny. He doesn't ask that you follow his path. So he gives us the power and the grace to follow our own path. He wants us to find what's real for us. A valid guide always leads us back to ourselves and to the riches within us. He doesn't say, cling to me and keep coming back to me because I have everything you need. He says, let me show you where it is in you so you don't have to keep coming back here except for nice visits. Shows you how to walk unencumbered through your own jungle. The guide may be the one who reveals or challenges you to see messages that are coming from your unconscious. We're going to go on to talk about dreams, so we'll go into that more in detail, because dreams are guides. A true guide never looks for ego enhancements or asserts his ego over ours. He leads us beyond our ego because he has already transcended it in himself. You only want the kind of a guide who has let go of his ego. He's not trying to make you a devotee. He's not continually showing how great he is. He's not trying to make the point that he's the central character in your life. And finally, our freedom to choose is an indispensable ingredient for our work in opening. A true guide cherishes and is immensely sensitive to our freedom. He wants us to have our own life, not be dependent upon him. As we become stronger, we would only want to be in relationships or organizations that are like what I just described. As soon as we saw that somebody was trying to control us, turn us into what they need us to be, using us for some purpose, making themselves indispensable in our lives, we would say no. Everybody follow? Good. Okay, any questions on this part of what we're talking about? All right. Well, after the break, we're going to go on to Chapter 7, which starts on 141, which is on our dreams. And when we come back, we have the pleasure of one more song with Tom. So let's take a short break, 10 minutes, and then come back. Mm-hmm.